Chapter 6. Dress and then waiting, to have her hair wound up by her mama. There was silence for a minute or two, till Mrs. Davilow said, while coiling the daughter's hair, "I am sure I have never crossed you, Gwendolyn. You often want me to do what I don't like."
"You mean, to give Alice lessons?"
"Yes. And I have done it, because you asked me. But I don't see why I should, else. It bores me to death, she is so slow. She has no ear for music, or language, or anything else. It would be much better for her to be ignorant, Mama. It is her role, she would do it well." "That is a hard thing, to say of your poor sister, Gwendolyn, who is so good to you, and waits on you hand and foot. I don't see why it is hard to call things by their right names, and put them in their proper places. The hardship is for me to have to waste my time on her. Now let me fasten up your hair, Mama. We must make haste. Your uncle and aunt will be here soon. For heaven's sake, don't be scornful to them, my dear child, or to your cousin Anna, whom you will always be going out with. Do promise me, Gwendolyn. You know, you can't expect Anna to be equal to you." "I don't want her to be equal," said Gwendolyn, with a toss of her head and a smile, and the discussion ended there. When Mr. and Mrs. Gaskin and their daughter came, Gwendolyn, far from being scornful, behaved as prettily as possible to them. She was introducing herself anew to relatives who had not seen her since the comparatively unfinished age of 16, and she was anxious, no, not anxious, but resolved that they should admire her. Mrs. Gaskin bore a family likeness to her sister. But she was darker and slighter, her face was unworn by grief, her movements were less languid, her expression more alert and critical as that of a rector's wife bound to exert a beneficent authority. Their closest resemblance lay in a non-resistant disposition, inclined to imitation and obedience. But this, owing to the difference in their circumstances, had led them to very different issues. The younger sister had been indiscreet, or at least unfortunate in her marriages. The elder believed herself the most enviable of wives, and her pliancy had ended in her sometimes taking shapes of surprising definiteness. Many of her opinions, such as those on church government, and the character of Archbishop Laud, seemed to decide it under every alteration, to have been arrived at otherwise than by a wifely receptiveness. And there was much to encourage trust in her husband's authority. He had some agreeable virtues, some striking advantages, and the failings that were imputed to him all leaned toward the side of success. One of his advantages was a fine person, which perhaps was even more impressive at 57 than it had been earlier in life. There were no distinctively clerical lines in the face, no tricks of starchiness, or of affected ease. In his Inverness cape he could not have been identified except as a gentleman with handsome dark features, a nose which began with an intention to be aquiline, but suddenly became straight, and iron-gray hair. Perhaps he owed this freedom from the sort of professional makeup which penetrates skin, tones, and gestures and defies all drapery, to the fact that he had once been Captain Gaskin, having taken orders and a diphthong, but shortly before his engagement to Miss Armin. If anyone had objected that his preparation for the clerical function was inadequate, his friends might have asked who made a better figure in it, who preached better, or had more authority in his parish. He had a native gift for administration, being tolerant both of opinions and conduct, because he felt himself able to overrule them, and was free from the irritations of conscious feebleness. He smiled pleasantly at the foible of a taste which he did not share at floriculture or antiquarianism, for example, which were much in vogue among his fellow clergymen in the diocese. For himself, he preferred following the history of a campaign, or divining from his knowledge of Nesselrode's motives what would have been his conduct if our cabinet had taken a different course. Mr. Gaskin's tone of thinking after some long quieted fluctuations had become ecclesiastical rather than theological, not the modern Anglican,
but what he would have called sound English, free from nonsense, such as became a man who looked at a national religion by daylight, and saw it in its relation to other things. No clerical magistrate had greater weight at sessions, or less of mischievous impracticableness in relation to worldly affairs. Indeed, the worst imputation thrown out against him was worldliness. It could not be proved that he forsook the less fortunate, but it was not to be denied that the friendships he cultivated were of a kind likely to be useful to the father of 6 sons and 2 daughters. And bitter observers, for in Wessex, say 10 years ago, there were persons whose bitterness may now seem incredible, remarked that the color of his opinions had changed in consistency with this principle of action. But cheerful, successful worldliness has a false air of being more selfish than the acrid, unsuccessful kind, whose secret history is summed up in the terrible words, sold, but not paid for. Gwendolyn wondered that as he had not better remembered how very fine a man her uncle was, but at the age of 16 she was a less capable and more indifferent judge. At present it was a matter of extreme interest to her that she was to have the near countenance of a dignified male relative, and that the family life would cease to be entirely, insipidly feminine. She did not intend that her uncle should control her, but she saw at once that it would be altogether agreeable to her that he should be proud of introducing her as his niece. And there was every sign of his being likely to feel that pride. He certainly looked at her with admiration as he said, "You have outgrown Anna, my dear," putting his arm tenderly round his daughter, whose shy face was a tiny copy of his own, and drawing her forward. "As she is not so old as you by a year, but her growing days are certainly over. I hope you will be excellent companions." He did give a comparing glance at his daughter, but if he saw her inferiority, he might also see that Anna's timid appearance and miniature figure must appeal to a different taste from that which was attracted by Gwendolyn, and that the girls could hardly be rivals. Gwendolyn, at least, was aware of this, and kissed her cousin with real cordiality as well as grace, saying, "A companion is just what I want. I am so glad we are come to live here. And Mama will be much happier now she is near you, Aunt." The aunt trusted indeed that it would be so, and felt it a blessing that a suitable home had been vacant in their uncle's parish. Then, of course, notice had to be taken of the 4 other girls, whom Gwendolyn had always felt to be superfluous. All of a girlish average that made 4 units utterly unimportant, and yet from her earliest days an obtrusive influential fact in her life. She was conscious of having been much kinder to them than could have been expected. And it was evident to her that her uncle and aunt also felt it a pity there were so many girls. What rational person could feel otherwise, except poor Mama, who never would see how Alice set up her shoulders, and lifted her eyebrows till as he had no forehead left, how Bertha and Fanny whispered and tittered together about everything, or how Isabel was always listening and staring, and forgetting where she was, and treading on the toes of her suffering elders. "You have brothers, Anna," said Gwendolyn, while the sisters were being noticed. I think you are enviable there." "Yes," said Anna, simply. I am very fond of them, but of course their education is a great anxiety to Papa. He used to say they made me a tomboy. I really was a great romp with Rex. I think you will like Rex. He will come home before Christmas. I remember I used to think you rather wild and shy, but it is difficult now to imagine you a romp," said Gwendolyn, smiling. "Of course, I am altered now, I am come out, and all that. But in reality I like to go blackberrying with Edwy and Lotta as well as ever. I am not very fond of going out, but I dare say I shall like it better now you will be often with me. I am not at all clever, and I never know what to say. It seems so useless to say what everybody knows, and I can think of nothing else, except what Papa says." "I shall like going out with you very much," said Gwendolyn, well disposed toward this naive cousin. "Are you fond of riding?" "Yes, but we have only 1 Shetland pony amongst us. Papa says he can't afford more, besides the carriage horses and his own nag. He has so many expenses. I intend to have a horse, and ride a great deal now, said Gwendolyn, in a tone of decision. Is the society pleasant in this neighborhood? Papa says it is, very. There are the clergymen all about, you know, and the Quallens, and the Arrowpoints, and Lord Brackenshaw, and Sir Hugo Malinger's place, where there is nobody that's very nice, because we make picnics there and two or three families at Winchester. Oh, and old Mrs. Vulcany at Nuttingwood, and... But Anna was relieved of this tax on her descriptive powers by the announcement of dinner, and Gwendolyn's question was soon indirectly answered by her uncle, who dwelt much on the advantages he had secured for them in getting a place like Offenden. Except the rent, it involved no more expense than an ordinary house at Winchester would have done. And it is always worth while to make a little sacrifice for a good style of house, said Mr. Gaskin, in his easy, pleasantly confident tone, which made the world in general seem a very manageable place of residence, especially where there is only a lady at the head. All the best people will call upon you, and you need give no expensive dinners. Of course, I have to spend a good deal in that way, it is a large item. But then I get my house for nothing. If I had to pay $300 a year for my house, I could not keep a table. My boys are too great a drain on me. You are better off than we are, in proportion. There is no great drain on you now, after your house and carriage. I assure you, Fanny, now that the children are growing up, I am obliged to cut and contrive, said Mrs. Gaskin. I am not a good manager by nature, but Henry has taught me. He is wonderful for making the best of everything. He allows himself no extras, and gets his curates for nothing. It is rather hard that he has not been made a prebendary or something, as others have been, considering the friends he has made, and the need there is for men of moderate opinions in all respects. If the church is to keep its position, ability and character ought to tell. Oh, my dear Nancy, you forget the old story. Thank heaven, there are 300 as good as one. And ultimately, we shall have no reason to complain, I am pretty sure. There could hardly be a more thorough friend than Lord Brackenshaw, your landlord, you know, Fanny. Lady Brackenshaw will call upon you. And I have spoken for Gwendolyn, to be a member of our archery club, the Brackenshaw Archery Club, the most select thing anywhere. That is, if he has no objection, added Mr. Gaskin, looking at Gwendolyn with pleasant irony. I should like it of all things, said Gwendolyn. There is nothing I enjoy more than taking aim and hitting, she ended, with a pretty nod and smile. Our Anna, poor child, is too short-sighted for archery. But I consider myself a first-rate shot, and you shall practice with me. I must make you an accomplished archer before our great meeting in July. In fact, as to neighborhood, you could hardly be better placed. There are the Arrowpoints, they are some of our best people. Miss Arrowpoint is a delightful girl as he has been presented at court. They have a magnificent place, Quetcham Hall, worth seeing in point of art, and their parties, to which you are sure to be invited, are the best things of the sort we have. The Archdeacon is intimate there, and they have always a good kind of people staying in the house. Mrs. Arrowpoint is peculiar, certainly, something of a caricature, in fact, but well-meaning, and Miss Arrowpoint is as nice as possible. It is not all young ladies who have mothers as handsome and graceful as yours and Anna's. Mrs. Davilow smiled faintly at this little compliment, but the husband and wife looked affectionately at each other, and Gwendolyn thought, my uncle and aunt, at least, are happy. They are not dull and dismal. Altogether, she felt satisfied with her prospects at Offenden, as a great improvement on anything as he had known. Even the cheap curates, she incidentally learned, were almost always young men of family, and Mr. Middleton, the actual curate, was said to be quite an acquisition. It was only a pity he was so soon to leave. But there was one point which she was so anxious to gain that she could not allow the evening to pass without taking her measures toward securing it. Her mama, she knew, intended to submit entirely to her uncle's judgment with regard to expenditure, and the submission was not merely prudential for Mrs. Davilow, conscious that as he had always been seen under a cloud as poor dear Fanny, who had made a sad blunder with her second marriage, felt a hearty satisfaction in being frankly and cordially identified with her sister's family, and in having her affairs canvassed and managed with an authority which presupposed a genuine interest. Thus the question of a suitable saddle horse, which had been sufficiently discussed with Mama, had to be referred to Mr. Gaskin. And after Gwendolyn had played on the piano, which had been provided from Wanchester, had sung to her ears admiration, and had induced her uncle to join her in a duet, what more softening influence than this on any uncle who would have sung finely, if his time had not been too much taken up by graver matters? She seized the opportune moment for saying, "Mama, you have not spoken to my uncle about my riding. Gwendolyn desires above all things to have a horse to ride, a pretty, light, lady's horse," said Mrs. Davilow, looking at Mr. Gaskin. "Do you think we can manage it?" Mr. Gaskin projected his lower lip and lifted his handsome eyebrows sarcastically at Gwendolyn, who had seated herself with much grace on the elbow of her mama's chair. "We could lend her the pony sometimes," said Mrs. Gaskin, watching her husband's face, and feeling quite ready to disapprove if he did. "That might be inconveniencing others, and would be no pleasure to me. I cannot endure ponies," said Gwendolyn. "I would rather give up some other indulgence, and have a horse." Was there ever a young lady or gentleman not ready to give up an unspecified indulgence for the sake of the favorite one specified? "She rides so well. As he has had lessons, and the riding master said she had so good a seat, and she might be trusted with any mount," said Davilow, who, even if as he had not wished her darling to have the horse, would not have dared to be lukewarm in trying to get it for her. "There is the price of the horse, a good 60 with the best chance, and then his keep," said Mr. Gaskin, in a tone which, though demurring, betrayed the inward presence of something that favored the demand. "There are the carriage horses, already a heavy item. And remember what you ladies cost in toilet now." "I really wear nothing but two black dresses," said Mrs. Davilow, hastily. "And the younger girls, of course, require no toilet at present. Besides, Gwendolyn will save me so much by giving her sister's lessons." Here Mrs. Davilow's delicate cheek showed a rapid blush. "If it were not for that, I must really have a more expensive governess, and masters besides." Gwendolyn felt some anger with her mama, but carefully concealed it. "That is good, that is decidedly good," said Mr. Gaskin, heartily, looking at his wife. And Gwendolyn, who, it must be owned, was a deep young lady, suddenly moved away to the other end of the long drawing room, and busied herself with arranging pieces of music. "The dear child has had no indulgences, no pleasures," said Mrs. Davilow, in a pleading undertone. I feel the expenses rather imprudent in this first year of our settling. But she really needs the exercise, she needs cheering. And if you were to see her on horseback, it is something splendid." "It is what we could not afford for Anna," said Mrs. Gaskin. "But she, dear child, would ride Lotta's donkey and think it good enough." Anna was absorbed in a game with Isabel, who had hunted out an old backgammon board, and had begged to sit up an extra hour. "Certainly, a fine woman never looks better than on horseback," said Mr. Gaskin. "And Gwendolyn has the figure for it. I don't say the thing should not be considered. We might try it for a time, at all events. It can be given up, if necessary," said Mrs. Davilow. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.